Well, I'm Neil Fagan.
And I'm Jeff Owens.
And welcome to Scribble.
Yep. I grieve for the living. I grieve for the dead. I grieve for the silence and a life filled with dread. I grieve for the people who now live in fear, who grieve for their fallen. I grieve for their tears. I grieve for the memories they don't get to make. I grieve for the experiences they don't get to take. I grieve for their lives lost in their prime. I grieve for today. I grieve all time. I grieve most of all for the world that they leave. For they the world's turning into. For this I will grieve.
There you go. Thanks for doing that, Jeff. That's for everybody who's been involved in the atrocities in Brussels. It's our... Well, it was written by Susan Worrell, and it came through this morning. I thought, you know, that's a real fitting start to the programme. So thanks for reading that, Jeff.
Yeah, very sombering.
Yeah, it is. It's probably a somber way of starting the programme, but with everything that's happened over there, I think it's a really good thing to do. So our thoughts out to all the families of people out in Brussels who've lost loved ones or loved ones have got injured. Okay, so let's crack on with the show. So we've got a packed show as usual today.
It's every good reason to be happy because in the UK we're just about coming up to bank holiday time. So
we are.
For those people who are scribbling and wherever you may be listening during the holiday time, if you're in the UK, welcome. Hope you get to enjoy us in wherever you happen to be doing for the bank holiday break.
Yep, so it's the Easter break. Everybody will be off trying to find the sun somewhere. I'm sure there's some sun somewhere, just not here. But we're going to start the show off. We've got a packed show today, so we've got about 18 poets that we're going to cover. So
get a wriggle on.
We better get a wriggle on with that. So we're going to kick it off with a piece by a lady by the name of R.C. De Winter, who we played one of her pieces a couple of weeks ago. I dropped a soundtrack under it, and she said, "Why did you do that?" And I said, "Well, we did it because we think that it always sounds a little bit better, gives it a bit of depth." Well, she went into production, she produced her own, so we thought we'd start the programme off with this one. So have a look at, listen to this, Jeff.
I've been longing for sweet words whispered in the dark. The rough but welcome scrape of bristled kisses. Hot but gentle hands sliding down my skin. I've been longing for a lover who has never appeared. I take myself to the sunrise ocean. I navigate the slippery rocks until I stand ankle deep in the cold New England sea. The waves whisper words of love. The sand scrapes my skin with kisses. Neptune's icy tongue inflames me, and I find my lover at last. If I cannot have a man, I'll take the sea. I will make my bed among the shells, beaten glass my jewels, seafoam my lace, slap of wave on rock my lullaby. As long as the moon stays its course, this love will never die.
Well, that's a nice relaxing piece to start the programme off, I thought.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, it was good though, wasn't it? Yeah, I really like that. And R.C. De Winter produces lots of great poetry. And I did thank her for the production on this because it was a brilliant piece. So thanks very much for that. Great, great way to start the programme off. A little bit sombre at the beginning because of our thoughts for the people in Brussels. But a really nice way now to set the scene for the rest of the programme as we move through to the different people who are involved. What we're going to do now is we've set up this collaboration with Poets Dream on Google Plus, and they each week supply three of their poets that we can profile. So we're going to do that at the minute. And we're going to go first of all to a guy by the name of Paul Murphy, who's a member of Poets Dream, and he's produced a poem called Your Cauldron's Heat. Now, unfortunately, Paul didn't want to record this, so he asked me to do it. So I've recorded it. See what you think to it. I quite like this. A darkened energy knows my tools, nothing bitter, nothing cruel. Lurking within this pattern of the man that I am. Deep breaths send it coursing from the pools of a long tainted mind. Have I found the eyes of the one who's not blind? Shivering veins, vibration erratic, unholy remains gyrating, ecstatic. Am I to blame, or just kind of pathetic, for wanting the burning in you? Beam me back, turn me away, another day I shall return, for lessons taught from your anger I've learned. Sends the flames of burning higher in my unholy desire for your eyes. Sweet soul, hypnotize me, set me free from this torture of need, this unholy seed who knows only lost, in your hands I entrust, to stamp me out in the dirt and the dust of a memory past, or cast me a spell from your cauldron's heat, and meet me in the shadows, need where sweet designs on your lay waiting, to feed upon your soul desire, burning with lust in the source of our fires. Take me then, break me, snap me in two. If 9.5 ain't enough for you, that missing point, a one called jealousy, the darkest place in a man like me.
I quite like that. It's going to be a bit racy, this programme, you know. I've just realised on the set, I've had a look at the set, and a lot of it's about love and lust. And
we might have to have this show certified.
Yeah, we might. Or I think I need certifying.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, 9.5 was enough for me there.
That was a really good piece. So thanks very much to Paul Murphy for that one.
Was that the first piece we've done from Paul?
First time he's been on. All the guys now that are on this this Poet's Dream set that we're going to do, these first three, are all new poets. That first time that we'll have covered them. In fact, this show this week is full of lots of new poets. There's a couple of old, old. I use that term lightly. There's a couple of people that we've covered in past shows. But on this one, we've got a lot of new people, so a lot of new experiences coming up. Great. Now, this one was done by a guy called Ferrick Gray, and it's called Butterfly Kisses. And have a listen to this. It doesn't last very long, but have a quick listen.
Sweet butterfly who flutters by, pons zephyr's breath to come my way. Alight here on him with a sigh, a marathon your presence stay. Your soft and gentle kisses sway these pensive thoughts of mind and soul to seek my haven, make me whole, as wings and waiting arms entwine to coalesce our hearts console. This rare blue butterfly is mine.
Very quiet voice that. I might have to turn the volume up on that in post-production, but very quiet, very soothing about the butterfly. It's a really nice piece. So that was the second one that they supplied us with. Really great that. So thanks very much, Ferrick Gray, for producing that one. And then we're going to a lady by the name of Sia Greenhorn, who's produced a piece called Flaming Fire, which is a cracking piece as well. So have a listen to this one.
In this world of pen and tongue around the globe, wars lost or won, be them family or close friends, love can cool as enemies end. When words spew forth without restraint, relationships crumble as gossip taints. Tame this tiny killer rudder, dam an ocean waves in motion. Contain a blazing forest fire, scattering victims in commotion. Yes, with earnest effort and desire, responsible and accountable inspired, for which the haughty fail to aspire. Curbed by a bridal tongue of respect, high-stepping dishonor by careful circumvent, an honest try to squash a lie or bragging sparks flung high to die. Before irreparable damage does prevent, healthy relationships and joyful content should be our endeavor to our utmost degree. Don't you agree? False witness and slandering against our brothers invalidates our Creator's decree for all to dwell together in unity. Reviling and apostasy cannot bubble forth consistently with blessings spoken persistently as sweet water with bitterness to any degree. So as teachers and instructors, we must concern ourselves with truth taught, always our goal to earn the approval of the highest, of him all must learn, using the tongue of the taught ones and in wisdom discern that words venomously expressed in hatred do burn.
Well, there you go. That's the trio from Poet's Dream this week.
I picked a sort of topical flavour, particularly with the Brussels thing about everybody wanting to be together and truth.
Yeah, and I have to say, you know, the response from all the poets on what's happened in Brussels has been phenomenal. So it's been great. We've had that outpouring of emotion everywhere. And people are writing some really good pieces of work. So
poetry is the last free place where we can be free to express ourselves without considering these acts that have been going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can do it other ways.
Yeah, you got it. So now we're going to talk about... we talked about a lady called, by the name of Karen King, who runs a poetry competition. And I think it was a couple of weeks ago we covered poet Peter E, who'd won that competition. Well, this week... a gentleman by the name of Colin Cameron, who you and I both know.
We do know Colin.
Yeah, won her competition. Now, unfortunately, Colin's gone down with a dreaded lurgy, so he couldn't record his poem that he won the competition with. So he asked me to cover it for him, so I did. And I gave a bit of treatment on this, and it's a really cracking poem.
Well, he's going to be listening. I know he's going to be listening, wherever you are.
Yeah. So if you're going to give us a lot of feedback, do it quietly, Colin, if that is possible, that is. So have a listen to this. See what you think to this one. Here it now stands, where once in regal dignity, now its splendour consigned to distant history. Its dominance once drew the attention of its gods, it stood there beauteous, proud, against all the odds. For the gods were jealous, how can this be? Turn, take a look at this magnificent tree. Go check it out, find out its intent, ask why it doesn't bow to us gods. Magnificent. Vanity's questions were preferred, no answers given. The gods answer to dumb insolence, lightning, tree-riven. So when were these acts, just how long ago? And where are these arrogant gods, do we want to know? They created nature's beauty, perfect, pure. Didn't find for their vanity eternal cure. They've gone, tree stands as a warning to all. Don't be as they'd make you, stand yourself tall. He always writes these very sort of gritty type poems sometimes, Colin.
Yeah.
And I think this was a really good one that he put
together.
Which
is actually nothing like Colin himself. He must have an alter ego when he writes.
Yeah, he must have, yeah.
That's not what Colin's like, but yeah, he's got something hidden inside him.
He has, yeah. So I thought it was a really cracking piece. So well done, Colin. You know, congratulations. It's nice to know somebody who's won an award for a change.
Mm.
Yeah, very good. Now, the next one we got lined up was actually, you voiced actually on this one, Jeff. For a lady by the name of Doreen Pearson. Now, it's a poem that her husband wrote, and sadly, he's passed away. But it was a great poem. It's called Winter Mood. So we're going to play that one next. And it's a real fitting tribute to her husband, because she's been posting his poetry online. She's from this neck of the woods originally, from the Wirral in Chester.
Okay.
But they've moved out to, I think it's Canada they're out in at the minute. And she's posting some of his poetry so that it can be heard. So, you've done a great job on this. I hadn't listened to it before.
It was a night of cut glass, when tortured trees were bit by razor ice, all unseen in woodland deep. I conjure forest trails in sleep, where long leaf conifers sway to a breeze and float a veil of spindrift white. A dream-walking night, when cathedral trees maintain a colloquy of sighs. A night wild as panting wolves that scatter claw prints around a stricken deer. A talon-sharp night, when a silent owl, its pale feathers suffocating ragged cords of terror, floats the dark menace of its shadow over a pool of lethal moonlight.
Whoa, that was good, that, Jeff.
His memory lives on, though.
It does, yeah.
If there is something great about poetry, it's a legacy that will always be with us.
You know, people can pick it up, read it in a book, or they can listen to it on the Scribble Show, because hopefully we've immortalised it there. So thanks very much, Doreen, for
for sending that in, and keep on promoting your late husband's work. It's a really nice piece. We've got another one that we'll cover in future shows as well.
Great. Look forward to that.
You can have a go at that one as well. Now, we had a gentleman on the programme last week called Warren C. Denson with one of his poems, which was voiced by AJ. And AJ's had a look at this one that he sent in. It's so good that I thought we'd play it again. It's called Broken Dreams. It's a new one by Warren C. Denson. And I think you'll like this one as well. It's really good.
Darkened rooms and nightmare fear. From these eyes flow bloody tears. This broken mind is so unclear. Nothing is as it appears. Piercing howl towards midnight. Demonic monster I must fight. My heart has lit the candle bright. Can't penetrate the blackest night. Shadows dance upon cracked walls. Little Red Riding Hood plays down the hall. Eyes of red, they do enthrall. Beating heart to me, it calls. Angelic wings, I start to fly. Rain of blood up to the sky. Satan's call, I do defy. Battle hordes before I die. Melting faces made of clay, sharpened knives start to flay. Evil laughter far away. This wicked clown has come to play. From my throat a curdled scream, drenched in sweat, a chilled bloodstream. Through the pain shine golden beams to send my soul these broken dreams.
Wow. That was great. Was that not great?
That was great. That actually was. It was more, I can't make it, it was like watching a thriller.
It was. Yeah, I kind of got lost in it then for a minute. You kind of lose concentration and just drift away with it. It was a great piece of writing, that. Absolutely superb.
Very good, followed nicely.
The theme of the winter mood. Yeah, as well. Yeah. So it was good to link those two together.
Good production there.
Yeah, really, really pleased with that. Thanks, AJ, for voicing it. And thanks to Warren for actually writing it, which was really good. Now, following on a little bit with that, we're going to move towards a piece by a gentleman by the name of Mike Provenzano. He's been on the programme before, probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago. But he sent me through this piece called My Curse. And it just kind of fits nicely with what we're doing today. So have a listen to this one as well.
My curse. It's an unexplained need to vent, to ramble. Let's spit it out. Put it on paper. Awakened by inspiration. Sleep lost. Infinite. Time travel. Sitting in place, words race across the page. Warp speed. My quill, my best friend. My worst nightmare. No escape. Dizzy with fever, feed me medication. Vellum and ink, my curse. Active once again, never any silence. Now let me think.
You see, I know all about having a rant. I have got that high horse.
If that wasn't an appeal to everyone who would like to scribble, that's what it is.
It
if
is.
You wake up in the middle of the night and there's something you absolutely have to get off, pick up your pen, get the piece of parchment or the vellum out and just write it down.
Yeah, and get it down.
That
so
was great.
It was
I'm going to write. I'm going to get up in the middle of the night tonight and write something out based on that.
Yeah, well, get you writing, get you into the programme.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you recorded, so thanks for that, Mike. Now, you recorded another one for us for a guy by the name of Andrew Jones. Now, Andrew's been having a bit of a tough time of it at the minute. He's been posting a lot of poetry. He's getting a bit disillusioned, you know. And that happens to all of us, all creatives. You get a bit delusioned because you're not getting the right sort of feedback or you're not getting any feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had this piece from Andrew that I've had in the background for a while, and thinking, right, we're going to play that in one of the programmes. And we had to get to show 7 before we play it. And this is one that you voiced for us
today.
Yeah, The Candle of Life. So, Andrew, cheer up, mate. It's a cracking poem, and Jeff's done a great job for you.
The Candle of Life. We have a box of candles in case the power goes out. Most households must have them in a cupboard or somewhere else. There are scented ones and thin ones and big fat ones too. And when you light a scented one, its perfume fills the room. Life is like a candle. They're quite fragile, just like us. It's quite easy to light one, and just as easy to put one out. 1 minute your candle's burning bright, but the very next minute it's been snuffed out.
I really like that.
I had a lot of fun doing that. I don't know whether Andrew knew this, but I like candles, so I, yeah. It was like a, and I suspect there's a childhood memory for some of us who particularly joined the miners' strikes from the candles.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that's back when I fell in love 18. With candles.
Yeah.
The whole smell, the whole ritual of lighting one, and when I heard that poem, I was there. I was back there.
Yeah.
And the great way that the parallels drawn with that, your lives are like that as well. They burn for only so long. Candle
and
goes
then
out,
snuffed out.
And then we're snuffed out. So live for the day, guys. That's,
yeah, absolutely.
That's what I took away from that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's the way it made me feel. You've got to grab today while you can.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got to grab today when you can.
Yeah, so there you go, Andrew. Keep on writing because keep
be
scribbling. Yeah, keep sending them in because you're inspiring us all here on The Scribble Show. Thanks very much for doing that. Now, we're going to do a bit of a short story. We're going to do it in two parts. So today we've got part one.
Oh.
Which would be kind of sensible than doing part two first, because that wouldn't make sense then, would it?
Is this becoming a serial then?
Yeah, it's going to be a little serial. There's only
tune
two parts.
Tune in next
to it.
Week.
Yeah, tune in next week. This is by Ryan Woods. It's called The Highland Thing.
Okay.
And he wrote this for a magazine. And part one's really good. And I've read part two, so part two's going to be next week. But get your ears around this one.
Hello, everyone. This is a short story I wrote for Devolution Z Horror Magazine. A Bigfoot special issue in December of 2015. Places and names have been changed to protect the innocent. This is called The Highland Thing, and I hope you all enjoy it. When you live in a place so isolated that the Oxford English Dictionary has shortlisted it as a definition of the word remote, you kind of accept that at times your mind is going to play tricks on you. The tree branch that scrapes on your bedroom window at night takes on the appearance of a hideous monstrous claw. The eyes you glimpse peering at you from the woods are no longer those of a nocturnal owl, but some mythical creature. And the wind that whistles around the eaves of your home becomes a sorrowful wail of some tortured spirits. Kinloch Muir is such a place. It is the most northerly port on the west coast of Scotland, and by all accounts the last place you come to before you find yourself falling into the sea and treading water. The nearest supermarket isn't exactly convenient shopping, it's 60 miles away, and the cinema and bank roll into town on the back of a lorry, literally. It is surrounded by thousands of acres of unspoiled Highland countryside, and that latter fact is what had brought him, and those before him, to the Highlands of Scotland. That and the offer of work at the huge fish processing plant. He'd been told on his first day in town and his first day in the job that isolation can either make or break a man. Robert Catterall, Bob got to his friends, wasn't the breaking kind. He had hands like coal shovels, the skin of which was as tough and durable as the hide of a rhinoceros, the result of working for more years than he could remember, aboard trawlers that fished the inhospitable waters of the North Sea. He'd been on board a Kraken fishing vessel when in gale force winds and battling 30-foot waves, three crew members had been washed overboard to a watery grave. One of them had been his nephew Jimmy. He considered it his duty to look out for him, to watch his back, and to bring him safely home to land at the end of each fishing run. So had his sister, Jimmy's mother. She hadn't spoken to Robert since. Grief had embittered her, and she had channeled that grief and bitterness towards him. Fish was in his blood, so to speak, and so when he had called time and working on the fishing vessel soon after, the offer of relocating and working at the fish processing plant seemed like a natural progression and a much-needed distraction from the images that haunted him on the open water. Surely the remote highlands would bring him some semblance of peace, he had thought at the time. Kinloch Muir had suited him perfectly. It was a small crofting community with an equally small population that had for some reason dwindled from 920 in 1881 to 480 in 2001, and down to a mere 256 according to the 2011 census. You'd ask why the community had gotten gradually smaller over the years, to be met with tightly responses at best. Perhaps the remoteness and isolation wasn't everybody's cup of tea, he concluded. Or perhaps it was something else. He'd heard whispers on more than one occasion whilst fending off the cold with a dram in the Kinlochmuir Hotel of a creature that had been spotted roaming the hills and forests of the outlying area. Angus Brodie, the community's resident drunk and teller of tall tales, had said that it was the Highland's very own Bigfoot, and had sworn to have seen the beast with his own eyes. Utter and complete horseshit, another regular had commented during one such, until then, hushed discussion. Robert's curiosity, however, had been mildly aroused by the conversation. He had come to the isolated community to get away from monsters, the ones in his head at least, not to go looking for them. But he couldn't help being slightly intrigued, and so he had bought Angus a drink, and as he sat by the crackling log fire, he had been repaid with tales of a beast that was neither human, nor animal, nor friendly.
"I'm not talking fucking Bigfoot and the Hendersons here, you know," Angus had said. "This ain't no cuddly human being wannabe. He doesn't want to be a part of the family, he wants to eat the family. This is one mean son of a bitch with a taste for flesh."
Robert had been entertained by Angus's tale enough to go searching for more information and for more witnesses who'd had sightings of the beast. He was of a very analytical nature and liked to catalogue facts and figures, a trait that he had begun when he started his career at sea. He may as well have been asking people about the existence of unicorns or hobgoblins from the reaction he got most of the time. People claimed either to have never seen it or dismissed its existence altogether. What happens in Kinlochmuir stays in Kinlochmuir, he'd have thought himself. And so he'd let the subject drop until on one particularly cold and snowy night in mid-October, the bobcat came face to face with the Bigfoot.
What? You're going to leave it there?
I am. I'm going to leave
face
you
to face
hanging.
With Bigfoot? Oh, come on.
Now we thought we'd keep everybody in suspense. What a cracking piece that is. For those of you Americans out there who don't understand the Scottish accent, neither do we.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Listen to it a couple of times and you'll get the drift on that one.
I suppose you have to have the sort of advantage of having been to Scotland to see that particular sort of landscape he's talking about to appreciate how remote and Bigfoot.
Yeah, it's cracking, that, isn't it? So I can't wait for next week's show. We're getting part two on that one.
I'm not going to. You've probably got part two on the studio somewhere.
I have. I've got part two in the studio, so you can listen to it this week.
Right, okay.
Okay, so nice one. Thanks for doing that, Ryan. We'll do part two next week, so you don't have to wait too long to hear that one. Now, moving on to a different genre, we're going to do a poem by a lady called Jennifer Salinas, who's one of the poets on Google+, another poet from Google+. And it's called Insatiable. So you really need to kick your shoes off, sit back and relax as best you can, because this is a cracking piece, this.
Your hunger is endless. You keep coming back for more. As you dive into me and into my core, your appetite is relentless. You leave me breathless as you devour me, making me yours wholly and completely, while your passion leaves me senseless. Your energy is infinite as you continue to take me. I eventually would like a turn, if I'm able. You are not the boy that I once knew, sweet and innocent. You are a man and a beast, perhaps a god from what I can see. Fits you well, fits your appetite, endless, powerful, and insatiable.
Well, there you go. I can see that look on your face.
Well, it's a personification of being insatiable. Yeah, well, what a feeling.
Yeah. Oh, it was, I just thought it was great. She sent it through to me. She was in Poets, and I saw the piece of work, and I said, do me a favour, send it to me so we can broadcast it. So she sent it straight through. That was a really, really nice piece to add to the session today. So well
done. Give us more.
Yeah, send more. Yeah, we want more. Keep them flowing in. In fact, all you scribblers out there, keep on sending your poetry in and keep on getting involved. Now, we're going to move to Alex Maxwell, was on the programme last week. We brought him in again this week because Steve said, after I played his poem, he said...
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I like it, but I don't get it. And I said, you've got to keep on going back and reading it, and then you'll get it. And Steve's done that. And he said, right, I've got it. Now can we have some more? So I said to Alex, do us a favour. Send us another one, which he's done. So see what you think to this one.
The reflection on the water. Cool. Crystal sun rays shimmer. The look upon your face curls my smile in place. Near you, the crowd is silenced. Opulent were their words, their eyes refracting fear, gathering, counting numbers together. The bird of time flutters by, grappling one in each hand. They do. For me, it's only you. There is an ocean, a sea breeze, between truth and lies, juggling regret with hope, someday hoping to forget. Spliced ropes, forearm thick, rest worn upon the walls. Fishermen in boats gently rise and suddenly fall. For me, it's only you. All I ask is to stay alert to what is good in this life. And of the others, please row not your boat of conquest. Inflict me with your disease of desire and more, as I only need be content with my love sitting on this harbour wall.
You know, one thing I've just realised, it's a good job we don't have the lights down in the studio, because I'd be so relaxed I won't be able to carry on with the programme.
I was sitting on that harbour wall thinking the same thing.
And I think the problem is because I know where he's from, down in Penzance in Cornwall. I can see it.
You can look
out to sea, sitting on the harbour wall. We've been there.
Right.
Well, both you and I have been down into that neck of the woods.
Beautiful place down there.
So really nice. Now, moving on from Alex's piece, a guy called Guy Means, who's on SoundCloud, he's got a great set of tracks on SoundCloud, has produced some really good poetry. He sent me a note and said, I've produced this piece called E equals MC squared. I thought, oh, that's interesting, because my mate Jeff's a bit of a scientist. He'll like this one. So I thought we'd play this, and I'll let you see what you think about it, Jeff, because I really like this one. But then again, I like all of them, so that's nothing to say there. But okay. Have a listen to it. See what you think.
This kid isn't Einstein or Newton either, getting chills down my spine from this newfound ether. Da Vinci's curd is just puzzling to me. The Rubik's Cube of life is my fantasy. Collapsing into hurls at the event horizon, into blackness I go with no lights arising, giving me a complex that seeks simplicity in these multiverses full of my deficiency. All dimensions of time and space I rewind, just confusing me more, lost in what I find. Exponential physics, dark matter repeating rhymes, smashing all the particles colliding in my mind, paralyzing mental talks, walking thoughts unheard, speaking in binary coded prime number words, counting one to zero, still seeing every third. The point I'm decimated and Fibonacci is heard. This is sacred geometry with a ratio that's golden, supersymmetrical lines and shapes we are sold on, dividing into fractals, infinite loops in your eye, twisting and turning forever in the sky, resembling a portal our retinas are defined by the clarity of crystal souls that shine. Collectively we are one, consciously intertwined, every synchronicity another evidential sign. Our world is quantum with a supermassive climb. The vortex of the torus is where we all align. Spiritually connected, this is how we are designed. Priceless jewels in sand and stir, eternally divine. Well, that's my theory. I feel more than I think. Our minds are on catch-up at an evolutionary brink. We must starve the ego so the soul can drink. Our third world crisis seen from the third eye wink. Pineal glands and chakras energized with DMT. DNA codons upgraded for free. And just like the E that equals MC squared light you see, seen relatively, warping at speed where sound will freeze, a sonic boom erupts, the waves crash at sea. Clouds of gas create fog, carbon atoms are the key. A big bang and a question, to be or not to be.
Well, there you go.
Threw a bit of Shakespeare in at the
end.
Yeah,
that's right. Science, Shakespeare, and
Alex, that ticked both boxes for me.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did a good job on that guy, didn't he?
There's some research that must have gone on there, because I was back doing my sort of A levels and my engineering background, and there were so many terms that came to life there that aren't everyday English.
Take some doing wrapping them into a poem as well, isn't it?
I've never seen it done before, but brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely cracking job that. So well done. Super. So moving on, it's a slightly different angle now. We're going back over to India, and we had a lady on called Seema Jayarama last week, and covered one of her poems, and she got a whole family together to listen to it being broadcast, which we thought was really nice. And I said to Seema, if you've got anything else, let us have a look at it, and we'll broadcast that as well. And she sent this through. It's called Blood Moon, and I kind of like this. I think it's really good.
A magnificent Gandharva wedding planned in the night sky. Sun and moon in groom's attire, earth bedecked as bride. Destiny wove in good humor a velvety dark blue tapestry and built a celestial altar studded with bodies heavenly. Arrangements centuries in making declared a rare sight. Several luminaries orchestrating a visual spectacle bright. With autumn season chosen, the equinox for a muhurat, planned on a Sunday night, the day of harvest arrived. Seers and the priests forecasting, as visionaries, bad omen in augurs, predicting an apocalypse impending, where none or earth survives. Down on earth, men of vice wrangle frantic invitations, to witness mysteries of nature unobscured in a clear sky. Moon beings light in demeanor to impress the discerning bride, puffed his chest to pedigree, crowned himself a supermoon. Sun, knowing his vast stature and size, arrogance over his might, assumed the center of universe for the would-be impressionable bride. In hand, a star-spangled garland, Dame Earth coyly at Sun glanced. Then she swayed a wee bit closer to the widely beaming moon. As she closed the gap, Earth so deeply shy on Moon's face cast a deep red dye. Moon all with pride did a crimson blush, deep auburn in hue, Moon was all aflush. Earth made her choice that flaming romantic night, with Moon in offing a duet, and they came so close. As Moon bent low a bow to place a kiss on Earth's brow, with the magic of the moment in the light of a pyre, Sun showered blessings the ever gallant night, cast all colors of sunrise, the marriage was solemnized. The doomsayers went on with their tongues aquibble, waggled their fingers and proclaimed the dire. They blamed the poor Moon and called him a blood moon for luring damsel Earth. Beware for a poor choice she made. They said the warm shade on Moon's face portends future wars to be fought by their seeds. On Earth's surface, days for men numbered fight over ill-gotten gains will end in disastrous means. While the newlyweds stole a moment of eternity, consummated their togetherness and elopement on Milky Way. Such was a wedding that happened, seen by the romantic's inner eye. A story of love unrecognized by the poor blind men on earth.
Well, there you go. I thought that was good about the blood moon.
I'm not sure if I can blame my wedding on the moon.
Well, I certainly can't blame mine on it.
No,
sure.
But yeah, what a fantastic ceremony to have been at.
Yeah, absolutely superb. So thank you very much for that. Really great piece. Now we're going to move back about all these troubles that we have with wars and all the rest of it. And a gentleman by the name of Darren Scanlon
produced a piece of work, and AJ very kindly voiced it for us today, and it's called The Spoils of War, and this is quite interesting to listen to.
And the troops go marching proudly by, as she wipes a tear from her weary eyes. The one that she seeks, she will never again hold, for he died at his post. He was 30 years old. The colors fly high on a cool autumn breeze, as man and boy march with well-practiced ease, so glad to be home after being so brave, with flags overhead and not covering their graves. She can bear it no longer as tears start to flow down pale, damp cheeks as she sways to and fro. Too much of their blood spilled on foreign fields as the whim of the tyrants and their deadly deals. Friends hold her up with compassion and love, and so many look down from the heavens above, surrounded by many who share in her grief, but the feelings yield little by way of relief. And the troops go marching with heads held high, ribbons on tunics for brave deeds gone by. But each feels the loss of their friends and their kin, and trauma buried deep beneath a mask now so thin. They've experienced things that just shouldn't be done, in the name of freedom, down the barrel of a gun. The memories will haunt them for the rest of their lives as they try to return to their children and wives. But in truth and reality, how can any return to their previous lives after all they have learned? No love and compassion, no laughter and smiles can replace what was lost across many long miles. They've all left behind their innocent souls, dead and buried in deep desert holes, leaving them drained and with aching hearts for a love and a life that has been torn apart. And the troops go marching so silently by on streets lined with people cheering and cries. But she turns her back on this painful parade, wishing time could roll back and her son would be safe. And there's rage in her heart for the tyrants who sent so many to their deaths, so much blood spilt and spent, as they cover their coffers, their spoils of war, like ghouls in the shadows keeping count of their score, rubbing their hands and patting their backs, lying and cheating and covering their tracks. Another quick round in their wretched games, the dice from the dealer dishing out death and pain. The survivors will never sleep soundly again, for the loss and the scars will always remain. The ghosts of their past, ever present and near, taunting as they sink in depression and fear. And the troops go marching so slowly by, some holding back, some with tears in their eyes. For the nightmare lives on in the world far and wide, where so many remain and so many have died.
Very poignant, that.
Dedicated to all the veterans.
It is, yeah. And I suppose it's all about that 6 degrees of separation. We probably all know somebody who's been in the armed forces and has been in danger. So that goes out to everybody there.
Yep.
That side. Right, okay. There's another gentleman by the name of James Kelly. I told you it was a packed show. This piece is called From the Mirror Came the Crash by this guy, James. It's a great piece. He's on SoundCloud, so if you want to catch up with his work, just go for James Kelly 6 and you'll be able to catch up with loads of work there. And we thought we'd broadcast this today because I like it, and that was a good enough reason, if nothing. So have a listen to this one, Jeff.
I still have the remains of the golden rosary that you hung from my rearview mirror to keep me safe. You knew the haste of which I was driving towards the edge of the story. You hung it faithfully and watched my eyes and the reflection grow dim. Even then, I had no expectation of salvation, only to throttle the pedal and live until I died. You promised promises of eternity and everlasting love and dedication, said prayers and quoted scripture. You said you wanted to keep me safe, so I didn't take it down. Even though its pendulum-like swing and hairpin turns chipped my sunglasses and Christ lost his head, I kept it there to keep me safe, like you wanted. Your token of love and heartfelt dedication stayed, swaying reverently as I sped through stoplights and strip club parking lots, festering wounds I didn't yet know were open, until Christ and I flew into the ditch on that S-turn off of Boudreaux Road, and my head became just about as tattered and worn as this depiction of my Savior on the cross. And then you came to me in a spurting culmination of tears with words of a lover's damnation. And you left. We were speeding in two different directions, and you didn't want to go down with me. Not with those sort of flames. You had a future, and all I had was a near-death experience, a broken rosary, and enough doctor bills to match your college tuition. But so far, that has been just enough to keep me safe.
There you go.
I hope that wasn't written from personal experience.
Yeah, me too. I must admit, when I listened to it, I did think that. I thought, yeah, that's pretty. Feels pretty close, that.
Yeah, it is pretty close, yes.
Yeah, but I thought it was a great piece. So if it is from personal experience...
I hope you're safe and sound now.
Yeah,
you're safe.
It's been a bit tough. So we're going to move on now to a lady by the name of Susan Guest, who's been following us and listening to the programme and posting her poetry. And she produced this piece called Whispers. And we got Louise, one of the team, to read this one for her today because Susan felt that it'd be better if somebody else read it. I really like this one, and the treatment we've given it's been really nice.
The whispers woke me just before dawn, ears straining to hear words meant to be private. I, with eyes closed, held my breath and focused my attention. Exhaling slowly, the air stirred as I eased from my cotton cocoon, my handsomely painted toes swiftly kissing the polished floorboards. There, again, that sound of breathless anticipation, sweet susurration shared, side secrets of surrender, paramours at play. With coffee in hand, I gaze out upon the bower that holds them, my heart longing for what they have found. Between ground and trees, flower and root, rain and air, life whispers and laughs.
So they're all following a little bit of a genre here. So
that's a nice way to get up in the morning.
It is, isn't it? Yeah,
I
really
like
that.
Fantastic picture there.
It is, yeah. It's just the pictures that it creates in your mind. Absolutely staggering.
To be woken up like that and to start your day in that way. Yeah,
it's great. So thanks very much for sending that in, Susan. Now we're going to move to a lady by Ilk Natan, who sent in a piece called Blind Love. And have a listen to this, Jeff, because we really are international here, so you're hearing all sorts of different accents. So have a listen to Blind Love.
I wish you would know my feelings towards you. If I could tell you, maybe you would love me. I can't call you my lover. This lie is the biggest, because you're my blind love, one that is burning passionately inside me. I'm longing for you, it's burning my heart, leaving smoke behind. You are my song that has never been sang. Without you, every night is dark. Did you know that this world is a complete lie? I have only a piece of life left. Come on and take that last piece.
There you go, that was Blind Love by Natan.
Now, where was that from?
No, I'm not quite sure where Elton Hale's from.
I can't
but it's,
place it.
No, I can't. I can't quite get the accent on that. In fact, I'll ask her. Let's find out where she's from because I really enjoyed that piece. It was good. So we've got our last poem now, and it's a play. It's written by a lady by the name of Rainy Sarmista, who's also over in India, and it's called A Rainy Night Waits. And Rainy's part of some of the groups that I get involved with in writing poetry, and she wrote this piece. She said, would you record this one and play it on the programme? and I really like it, so I recorded it because I'm selfish like that. So have a listen to this one. Dear love, I wait in the dark wood just for you. The downpouring night tells a tale of you and me every dark night. The burning desire of my royal barge gradually drifted back to the shore of your burned soul. The wet road of our memories breaks all the gaps between us. Oh love, you hide me like the clouds that hide the rain. The flames of our burning souls, undressed by the smoke of your guts, I wait in the dark wood, only for you, my beloved. See, I chose that because I'm selfish.
I can understand why. Why not? The good things in life.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm in the driving seat, so I can do that. I can pick and choose. Great piece. Thank you very much, Rainey, for putting that in. Well, that's it for this week. We're not going to do a limerick this week because of the issues over in Brussels.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a rain check on that this week, but they'll be back next week. And I think next week we've got some poetry that you did on location, I think, up in the lake.
We certainly have, yes.
Yeah, so that should be quite interesting. Yes, stay tuned for that one. So only remains to say to everybody, keep on scribbling.
Yep.
Thanks very much for listening to today's programme. And as we say every week, may your God or your gods go with you.